We all have tasks we'd like to avoid, like mailing and shipping. It takes time lugging all those letters and packages to the post office. That's why you should try Stamps.com. For 25 years, Stamps.com has made mailing and shipping easy. You get all the services of the post office right on your computer, anytime. No traffic, no waiting, no hassle. Plus, you save money with discounts up to 84% on USPS and UPS. With Stamps.com, all you need is a computer and printer. Print stamps, print shipping labels, and if you sell products online, Stamps.com connects with every major marketplace and shopping cart, so you can spend less time on shipping and more time on your business. Get started with Stamps.com today. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus postage and a digital scale. Just go to stamps.com and enter code PROGRAM.
We spent the first hour on the Women's World Cup, turning our attention to Major League Baseball now. Still the dog days of summer. So even as I point out, it's 5 weeks until we are immersed in reaction to NFL Sunday week one. We got to get through the month of August in Major League Baseball, and we're post-trade deadline, which means teams are trying to find their stride. They're trying to get comfortable. Maybe they've shuffled the lineup. They've lost pieces. They brought in new pieces. The lines are clearly drawn. And we're seeing strange, strange happenings. It's like Halloween in early August for teams like the Angels, who've dropped six in a row, the Reds, who've dropped six in a row, the Diamondbacks, who've dropped six in a row. Well, the Mets, no one really cares about except Jay. They've also dropped six in a row. Well, he doesn't care either. But the other three are contenders. And so here you are seeing these teams that did make moves or did position themselves, and instead they're going the wrong way. It's the opposite for the Padres. Have they waited too long? Have the Padres screwed around, wasted enough time that they're not going to be able to recover and compete? Or are we seeing a repeat of 2022? They were hosting the arch rival Dodgers on Sunday night.
And now the 3-2, and a high fly ball to right. It's deep and it's on its way. And Freddie Freeman with a 3-run home run. And the Dodgers are doing damage to their former teammate, Rich Hill. They are beating them to a pulp.
Charlie Steiner just not pulling any punches there on Dodgers radio. Yeah, Rich Hill gave up a bunch of home runs. That was a problem. San Diego manager Bob Melvin knows the team is so close to getting over that 500 hump.
We've come up against that 500 mark a couple times now, and, you know, we'd like to be able to push through that and get on the other side of it. Hopefully that'll be a big hurdle for us.
They're so close, two games shy of it. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Pleased to welcome Sammy Levitt, who is the pre- and post-game host for the Padres Radio Network. It's now midnight San Diego time. He's had a chance to breathe. And at this point, there's plenty of time left in the season, Sammy. We know the Padres are making up some ground. So what's gotten into them the last couple of weeks?
Well, they've played a better brand of baseball overall, even with the loss earlier tonight to the Dodgers. They're 18-12 since July began. Obviously, the first half of the season, really the first 90, 100 games, they weren't what people expected here in San Diego. This was a team that came in with true World Series aspirations, and even taking a step back before that, had real aspirations to win this division. And obviously the Dodgers have a big lead on them right now. And I don't think anybody here in San Diego is necessarily thinking about the division right now. But what they are thinking about is the wild card. And that is very, very doable right now. The Padres, even after tonight, after a loss, they're three games out of a wild card spot in the National League. The teams in front of them, whether it be Miami or Arizona or Cincinnati, have not played well lately. And you look at this Padres team, they are super, super talented, and they've done some things this year that would lead you to believe their record should be much better than where it is. The team's below 500. The starting pitching's been pretty excellent all year. The run differential is among the best in the National League. Obviously, they have star power offensively with Soto and Machado and Tatis and Bogarts, what Ha-Sung Kim has done. You know, they've got back end relief in Hader and in Suarez. I mean, it's a team that should have the ability to go on a run here, and I would think make up three games, you know, in the standings in 50 games, especially with the teams really struggling in front of them. So that's where they are right now. They played a better brand of baseball here the last month plus, and the key for them right now is they have to keep playing that way and really get above 500 and then go from there.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because I was going to ask, even if it's just more of a benchmark for where they are and how far they've come, how much does it matter that they are getting so close to that 500 mark?
Yeah, well, they had a little bit of a ceiling with that 500 mark lately. Just in this series against the Dodgers, they had an opportunity to get back to 500 on Friday, had a late lead, bullpen couldn't hold it, and they dropped back to two games below 500. They get a big-time win yesterday, a huge rally in the eighth inning, and I think you could argue their most important rally inning game win of the season yesterday. And then here today, they fall behind 6-0 and they lose the game. They fall back to two games below. So they cannot right now find a way to get back to 500. They haven't been at 500 since May 11th when they were 19-19, which is hard to believe considering the level of talent on this team and what the expectations were. But we all, I think, acknowledge here in San Diego that in order for them to get to the postseason, to do what they need to do to get there, and it is doable right now with how the standings line up and the teams ahead of them, all of it, what we just discussed, they are going to have to get back to 500 at some point and then get over it. So that is the next plateau for this team. Like I said, they're playing better baseball, but absolutely getting to 500 and then getting over it, that would be step one in what they need to do these final couple of months.
Looking back over the first two-thirds of the season, what would you point to? What culprit maybe? What challenge? What fatal flaw has kept them from being competitive?
Yeah, there are really two areas, Amy. Number one, they've had issues with runners in scoring position all year. It was a major issue throughout the first half. It's been better lately, but they've been towards the bottom of Major League Baseball in at-bats with runners in scoring position, team batting average with runners in scoring position all year. It's been a big problem all year, and there are still times, even in this nice run they've had since the start of July, where those issues have popped up again. The other part of it is the close games. I mean, they're 6-18 in one-run games. They're 0-10 in extra inning games, which is hard to fathom, being 0-10 in extra inning games, because as you know, Amy, as everybody knows, you're tied going to extra innings. And certainly with the randomness of having the runner on second base now, you would think one of those games would fall your way, especially with the lineup the Padres have. It is not. They're 0-10. So those two things, issues with runners in scoring position, and then, you know, it's been sort of, in some ways, a very mystifying team at times with the issues in close games, the issues in extra innings. But it's just been that way for whatever reason, and they have not been able to figure out those issues in close games consistently. You know, they've won some of them, but there have just been a lot of games that they've lost in a variety of different ways. So that's why when you look at things like run differential, when you look at how good their starting pitching has been,
right,
and then you look at their record, it doesn't really make sense, right? Because you would think with some of these numbers, they'd be better. And in fact, their expected win-loss record is a lot better than where they are. But then you look at the issues in close games and one-run games and extra innings, and it sort of tells the story. And that part of it has been really hard to figure out this season why exactly they've had so much trouble. Their bullpen has been very good at times. It's been not as good at times, but still, 6-18 in one-run games is obviously something that's been hard to figure out, I think.
Sammy Leavitt is with us from San Diego. After Sunday Night Baseball, where the Padres do fall to the Dodgers, but getting so close to that 500 mark, figuring out what's behind the surge and how they can maybe make another run to the NLCS. He's with the pre- and post-game show on Padres Radio Network and our San Diego affiliate, 97.3 The Fan. It's After Hours, CBS Sports Radio. How much confidence can they take from last year when they did get all the way to the NLCS as a wild card and as a team that made a late surge similar to what they will need this year, Sammy?
It's a great point, Amy, and I say this with confidence. I don't think there's any team in the National League that would want to face the Padres if they do get into the postseason for all the reasons we've discussed. The quality of their starting pitching, the star power they have in the lineup, the back-end arms in their bullpen, whether it's a Robert Suarez or a Josh Hader, who's obviously, or I should say arguably, been the best closer in baseball this season. He's been terrific for this team here in 2023. I think this team should have a lot of confidence. And again, it's a very doable thing they have to do, which is pick up three games right now in a wild card race in 50 games, especially with some young teams struggling ahead of them. I think if they get in, they are extremely dangerous. And they should take confidence in the fact that, you know, they got in via a wild card last year. They ended up beating a couple of 100-win teams in the Mets and the Dodgers in the wild card round and then the National League Division Series. And, you know, a couple of things go differently in the NLCS. Who knows how that series ends up against the Phillies. So, you know, for them right now, in my mind, and I think in their minds too, it is do what we got to do to get in. They've got work to do. They've got ground to make up. They've got to get back to 500. And yes, everybody thought they'd be battling for a division and they wouldn't be under 500 here in early August. But if you forget all that and you just focus on getting into the dance, I think this team has a ton of potential to go on the same type of run they did last year and maybe even further if they can get in. But that's the key right now, getting in. Because, again, you look at some of the things this team does well, some of the parts, some of the star power. It would be a team that if I'm in the National League would really scare me if I have to play them in a wild card round and beyond.
No doubt, especially with that experience. They actually did do some homework on Justin Verlander and potentially bringing him in, and it wasn't the right fit. They did have a couple of their own pitchers who were at least dangled, but they didn't like the offers they got at the deadline. So what's your reaction to them not being the Mets, right? Not deciding to divest themselves of big time pieces, standing pat and believing that they can, in fact, make something special of the rest of 23.
Yeah, Amy, I thought it was the right thing to do on a number of different levels. First, I just felt like they were in it. And I look at the teams ahead of them, and I think, you know, even, you know, they were. I'd have to go look where they were a few days before the trade deadline. They weren't three games out. It was more like five, six games out. But I thought you were within striking range enough, and there's been so much investment in this team. You know, something we talked about, I think, during the playoff run last year was just the crowd in San Diego and how unbelievable it was. Amy, it's been amazing in San Diego at Petco Park this year. To give you an idea, they've sold out the building 48 times in 55 openings, including tonight.
Wow.
I mean, this fan base has so passionately bought into this team, even despite them not playing up to expectations to this point in the season. You know, I think, again, from what they can do if they just get in to the idea of rewarding the fan base a little bit and saying, you know, we're not going to trade a Blake Snell. We're not going to trade a Josh Hader. What we're going to do instead, and this is what they did, was add on some depth. That's making the trade for G-Man Choi and Rich Hill from Pittsburgh, getting Garrett Cooper from Miami, some bench pieces, some guys you can DH. They can play some first base, adding Scott Barlow from Kansas City in the bullpen, adding on to this team's depth. You know, I just thought with the potential this team has to go on a run and with the teams in front of them starting to struggle, I personally thought it was worth just adding a little bit and not selling any pieces away. And also from the emotional standpoint, I admit, like, the stuff with the fans and things like that, that's me talking as somebody who's at the ballpark every night. But I wanted a fun final couple of months. I want these fans to keep coming out and be rewarded a little bit with a team that can go on a run. So I felt that way about it on both those levels. And, you know, obviously you make a great point on the Mets. They were in a similar situation, a little bit different just because of the contracts of Scherzer and Verlander and having those guys on short-term deals and their older pitchers and all of that. It's a little bit different, but very, very similar in the sense of a team that has a big-time payroll, big expectations, and to that point by the trade deadline had not lived up to those expectations. And you're right, they've gone in very different directions. You know, Was it 100% the right choice for the Padres not to get a return for Snell and Hader, things like that? I think that's a conversation we can only have once the season is over and we see where the Padres go, because I think if they make the postseason, it 100% was the right decision not to move those pieces. So long answer to your question, but I really thought what they did was the right thing to do on multiple levels. And again, I think for them, if they can get in, yeah, they're really, really dangerous. And like I've been saying, right now, three games out, 50 games to play, it's very, very doable. This team, all they have to do is play the baseball they're capable of.
Well, and you think about the crowds, as you pointed out, which is a major home field advantage, but also their recent sweep of the Texas Rangers, who have been in first place in the AL West the entire season. Sammy Leavitt is Padres radio host, joining us from San Diego following Sunday Night Baseball after hours, CBS Sports Radio. If you don't mind, just a couple of words about Fernando Tatis and how he has been reintegrated back into the lineup, the roster, after everything he went through. How different is he as a person and a baseball player?
Yeah, I think Fernando's done everything right. You know, I was there last summer right around this time when the suspension came down and when he spoke inside the dugout with Padres president of baseball operations, general manager A.J. Preller, and he apologized and you know, all of it, you know, that happened last season. Obviously, it was a very disappointing season between the injuries and the suspension, and then ultimately comes back in mid-April this season. I think Fernando's done everything right. He said all the right things. He's come back to the clubhouse, come back to being on the field every day, and has had a terrific attitude. He plays hard. He's embraced playing right field 100%, and Amy, he's been a Gold Glove caliber right fielder. He's been sensational out there. Offensively, I think considering the time he missed, a full year in the major leagues, he's been pretty good. You know, it's been a little up and down. He's been slumping a little bit lately, but he's been hitting the ball hard, and I think a lot of that's bad luck too. But you look at his numbers, and he's going to end up having some very solid numbers this season. On top of that, dealing with a position change to right field, playing truly a Gold Glove caliber right field, and obviously just getting back into the swing of playing Major League Baseball each and every day, something he hadn't done in a while. So to me, he's done all the right things, even early in the season when he's dealing with hecklers in New York and Chicago. I mean, he's dancing with them. He's played it the way I thought he should have played it, with that personality, the infectious smile he has. He's kind of just embraced it. And, you know, we haven't, you know, there have been no issues with any of that stuff to him. So it's been fun to watch. He's such an exciting player. And I think all things considered, both with what he's done as far as coming back, what he said, how he's reacted, and what he's done on the field, you know, amidst the position change, which is very significant, I've enjoyed this season from Fernando. I think he's done a very good job.
Even as the Padres are surging now, they're looking up at the Dodgers again. The Dodgers are the team that people thought before the season started really weren't equipped to battle in what was a much deeper NL West. They didn't make a lot of moves. They lost Trey Turner. What do you think about these Dodgers who seemingly have staying power that they shouldn't?
Yeah, Amy, you know, coming into the season, the talk or the wonder was, what would the Dodgers be? Would they be nearly as good as they've been all these years past? And it's a different looking team. You know, they assembled it a little bit differently, relying on younger players coming into the year. But the constants at the very top of that lineup, Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman.
Yes.
And they've both been terrific. I mean, Freeman is one of, if not the best hitter in baseball right now. He's just playing so wonderfully offensively. Had the home run today. Mookie Betts also had a home run earlier today or tomorrow, or yesterday, I should say, whenever you're listening to this, on Sunday. they're the constants at the top. You know, they've had guys like J.D. Martinez, you know, signed, and Jason Hayward, veterans that have found it again with the Dodgers. I mean, the Dodgers seem to have this ability to take players and find what makes them great again. He's had a great season. Martinez has. Hayward's contributed. You know, they make some deals at the trade deadline. Lance Lynn, a good example today of somebody who was not having a good season at all with the Chicago White Sox. And what do you know? He goes 7 innings, 3 runs given up earlier this week in his Dodgers debut, and he goes 6 innings, 1 run given up here today against the Padres. All of a sudden, he looks like Lance Lynn of old. And you look at Amed Rosario had a home run today. Kike Hernandez is contributing. So they made moves, Rosario, Hernandez, Lynn, at the deadline that are contributing right away. So, again, the constants are Betts and Freeman. They've done some really good things with guys like Martinez. And obviously they have Max Muncy, who hasn't been in the lineup for a couple of days. He's contributing in a major way. They've got James Outman, some other guys, younger players that have contributed. And, you know, their pitching, I think, is still a little questionable. But, you know, they're doing it. They're finding ways. And, again, I just always look at the top two right now, and Betts and Freeman, and they set the tone. They've both been just simply terrific this season once again.
And yet the Padres are making up ground, now just 3 back of the final wild card in the National League, and certainly have the experience, the veterans. We know about their power and their pitching, so watch out. Nobody wants to face them in October, but they got to get there first. Sammy Leavitt is the pre- and post-game host for the Padres Radio Network and also part of our San Diego affiliate, 97.3 The Fan. You can find him on Twitter at Sammy Lev, L-E-V. Great to catch up with you again. Let's see if we'll do this in October, Sammy.
Absolutely, Amy. I hope so. I hope I'm talking to you again after a playoff series at Petco Park. That would be a lot of fun. Thanks so much.
The Padres are getting close, but haven't been over 500 since they were, 19-19, he said. That's a long time. The potential is there, though. And the point that I made with him that I think is critical, they did this last year. Remember, they made moves at the trade deadline, but what was it, Juan Soto, who couldn't hit the broadside of a barn when he first got traded there? And even though they didn't make as many drastic moves at the deadline this year, still the point is that they... This group, for the most part, it's the same group, found a groove and took off like a rocket. Not only made the playoffs as a wild card, but then stunned several other teams that they had really no business beating unless you recognize what they had done the last month of the season. So could they potentially do it again? It makes no sense why they wouldn't, because they have all the pieces they need. Of course, that is sports. Find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. We've got a video up in which a former Olympian and now Fox soccer broadcaster went to the Sydney Zoo and had an encounter with a lion. Seriously, you have to watch this. I can't decide if I would do it, but we're asking you, would you do this? Let me know, would you do this? On Twitter, on Facebook too, it's After Hours, CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
First pitch presented by Cincinnati Children's, changing the outcome together. Lyon Richardson's first pitch is hammered to right field, very deep, very gone. C.J. Abrams takes Lyon Richardson deep on the very first pitch that Richardson throws of his Major League career. For Abrams, that is his 11th home run of the year. It is 1-0 Nationals.
That was a bit anticlimactic.
Yeah, it was a bit. First career leadoff home run for Abrams. That was a no-doubter. He got it all. Here's Lane Thomas. I'll see if he can settle in now. The pitch. Thomas swings, and he sends a high fly ball. This is to deep center field. Friedel back. He's at the wall. He leaps. That's gone. 2 pitches, 2 home runs for the Washington Nationals on back-to-back pitches. 19th home run of the year for Lane Thomas. Of course, he just continues his assault on Reds pitching. It's 2-0 Washington.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
That's not exactly what the Reds were looking for. I suppose, though, if you get it out of the way early, maybe it doesn't ever happen again. No place to go but up for Lyon Richardson. Poor guy. I actually felt for him. The Reds pitcher making his baseball debut. So literally, first two pitches thrown in the majors. As you hear on Reds radio, he gives up two home runs on two pitches. So, ugh.
I didn't think I made that bad of a pitch. I might have missed a little bit more middle than I wanted to. I think he was just ready for a heater and hit it. I don't think I'd redo it. No.
Oh, if only I could have that pitch back. How often do we hear that? And yet, right, it's one pitch. It's not the rest of his career. It's just that how do you forget that when you give up two home runs on two pitches? So what about nerves? Any anxiety while you're out there for your debut?
There's always nerves, but I do a pretty good job managing it. And it wasn't necessarily the nerves that got the pitches hit. It was me. it was good. I was all right.
You don't see that very often. And I thought, you know, in the end, I mean, it's an unfortunate way to start the game and your major league career. But he has a long one ahead of him. And just the way he was able to really just keep pitching and hold it together and get through the three innings was, you know, really says a lot about Lyon. I mean, it's a tough way to start. I mean, you get off to a rough start like that in your debut. We've seen guys just, like, you know, back away. And we know that about Lyon, but I thought that he really was given an opportunity right there to demonstrate who he is and why he's going to be so good here.
Well, isn't that nice validation from David Bell, the manager of the Reds? I love what Lyon said, though. It's got to be my new favorite drop or my new favorite bite. The nerve didn't give up the home runs I did. Well, that's a good point. Still, that's awesome. How often do people talk about their anxiety? I was nervous. I was trying to talk myself down off a wall. I was trying to keep myself calm. Yeah, that's not actually what happened.
It wasn't necessarily the nerves that got the pitches hit. It was me.
So good. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Coming up, it was the brawl heard round Major League Baseball over the weekend. I'm not even sure what happened still, but the words are flying back and forth between the Reds. Oh, sorry, not the Reds. We just talked about the Reds. Between the Indians and the White Sox, different central. Even now, the two teams still jawing back and forth. And the brawl seemed to go on forever. That was the part that was crazy. Tim Anderson would not stand down. Not with a dozen of his teammates trying to hold on to him. He would not stand down. And I'm not putting it all on him, only that this brawl had multiple waves, if you will. You can win the war and yet lose the battles. So we'll get to that. And next hour, it's always emotional at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Clearly, the induction was more compelling than was the Hall of Fame game on Thursday evening. Plus, I got to tell you my story of seeing John Williams, the John Williams, my all-time favorite conductor, composer, the Boston Pops, who I'd never seen in person, in a venue that had phenomenal acoustics. For those of you who've been to outdoor amphitheaters, I've never heard a venue with better acoustics than Tanglewood in the Berkshires in Western Massachusetts. Now, none of that helped me get out of the parking lot. Well, I got out of the parking lot. I just couldn't. Just wait. This is so classic, Amy. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Here it comes. A swing and a smash to first by the diving Vaughn. Down the right field line. Kicks into the corner. Ramirez on his way to second. Head first slide. Safe and in to score is Jimenez. And another hustle double. Right over the bag at first. Now Hosey and Anderson square off. They're fighting. They're swinging. Down goes Anderson. Down goes Anderson. Ramirez went in with a head first slide. Hosey never gets upset about anything. They came up chewing. Anderson squared off. Hosey decked him. It's a 5-1 Chicago lead, but everybody
and the bullpens congregated around second base. You never see Jose Ramirez get upset like that. And Tim Anderson was on the wrong side of that punch.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Tom Hamilton on the Cleveland Guardians radio network. Oh my gosh. Down goes Anderson.
Down goes Anderson. Down goes Anderson.
Is he calling a heavyweight fight or is he calling a brawl in Major League Baseball? Now, I'll give him this. He's got a flair for the dramatic, and this one seemed to last for a while. Not only did it clear the benches, but it had multiple waves. There was the initial brouhaha out at second base. Then, even after Anderson was contained and corralled by his teammates, held back, he somehow managed to start another altercation. The third time, he had teammates throwing him down the stairs toward the clubhouse. But yeah, it spread. It was like poison ivy, and it just kept spreading. And for those of you who have a problem with poison ivy, I know not everyone does. I don't particularly, but my mom, she can look at it and all of a sudden breaks out in a massive rash. Same thing with producer Jay. This is why he tells his parents he can't possibly do yard work, because the poison ivy flocks to him.
That's the reason.
It's your version of mosquitoes. Mosquitoes love me. Poison ivy loves you.
I'm similar, where if I'm just in the vicinity, it's going to find a way to stick onto me somehow. I don't know
stick
why.
Stick onto
it
me.
Does.
It's going to stick me. Poison ivy's going to just, it's going to leap onto my skin. Somehow the droplets from the leaves are going to fly onto my skin. Anyway, that's what was happening here. This brawl had poison ivy. It was spreading. Jose Ramirez, why go after Tim Anderson initially?
I think he's been disrespecting the game for a while. It's not from yesterday, but from before. And I've been having the chance to tell him during the game, don't do this stuff, that's disrespectful, don't start tagging people like that. Because in reality, we're here trying to find ways how to provide for our families. And when he does the thing that he does on the bases, he can get somebody out of the game. So for me, I was telling him to stop doing that. And then as soon as the play happened, he tagged me again really hard, more than needed. And then his reactions, like he said, I want to fight. And if he wanted to fight, I just had to defend myself.
I'm not sure I know everything. Before it started, I know that Anderson was yelling at Arias, because I mean I think the umpire went and told him to knock it off. And then when Hosey slid in the second, I think Hosey felt like he kind of stood over him. And then things got away from everybody.
Terry Francona, he cracks maybe like, I don't really know all of it, to be honest.
I'm not sure I know everything.
Trying to wade very carefully into this altercation started by Tim Anderson tagging Jose Ramirez, Hosey, as Francona calls him, tagging Hosey too hard. Now, Hosey himself, through a translator, indicates, I warned him. Oh, okay, you warned him? Well, that doesn't sound like an invitation to cross the line. You warned him not to tag you too hard? There's a couple of things here. Did you get a bruise? Is that what happened when he tagged you too hard? Did it hurt more than your ego and your pride? Well, are you so soft that if a guy tags you too hard, you have to defend yourself? That part cracked me up. The translator saying at the end that, and this, of course, comes from Jose, who was standing right next to him if you watch the video, that Jose had to defend himself from Tim Anderson tagging him too hard. What does that even mean? He tagged me too hard. Now, Jose does say when you don't respect another player's livelihood, when you are a little bit too rough, it can be injury inducing. But come on, he tagged me too hard. I warned him. The tag was applied with a little bit too much mustard on it. They put mayo on my burger at Wendy's, so for that reason, I'm going to pick a fight. Come on, get over yourself. Down goes Anderson. Down goes Anderson.
Down goes Anderson. Down goes Anderson.
That's tremendous.
It is. Oh, again, Tom Hamilton turning into theater, actually worthy of Hamilton on Broadway. Seriously, just listen to Josie. Hosey, Josie, as Francona calls him, about why he fought with Tim.
I think he's been disrespecting the game for a while. It's not from yesterday, but from before. And I've been having the chance to tell him during the game, don't do this stuff, that's disrespectful, don't start tagging people like that. Because in reality, we're here trying to find ways how to provide for our families. Oh. And when he does the thing that he does on the bases, he can get somebody out of the game. So for me, I was telling him to stop doing that. And then as soon as the play happened, he tagged me again really hard, more than needed. And then his reactions like he said, I want to fight. And if he wanted to fight, I just had to defend myself.
So somehow Ramirez interpreted the hard tag to be an invitation from Tim Anderson to fight. Fight, fight, fight.
Soft.
Again, I do understand you don't want to hit people hard because, yes, if you injure someone, it's their livelihood, and one injury can be the end of a player's career, but not this one.
This particular play was so bang bang. It's a throw from the outfield and Ramirez even lifts up his head as right. The tag's being made. So that's probably why the contact was made a little higher because he didn't slide right. I mean, I don't know what he's talking about in the past, what Anderson has done, mm-hmm. particularly to him, but on this particular play, it's a bang bang play at second base. I don't see anything wrong.
I don't either. Unless, of course, there's history.
And if he did tag you hard, I mean, he tagged you. I don't know.
He's doing his job. Yeah. Also, suck it up. I'm sorry. That's just whatever. So I guess if it mattered to you that much, you're going to pay with a suspension more than likely. And we just need more Terry.
When you're my age, you're just trying to help. I mean, I didn't appreciate the fact that I thought Anderson, once he had like 11, 12 guys in between him, that's when he started. Yeah, and I said something to him. I think that's probably what their manager was yelling about. But you know, it's hard because it's hard to let somebody speak to you like that and not say anything. So emotions, that's okay.
Yeah, see, I don't have any issues with people getting upset when something nasty is said, right? I don't have any problems with that. Actually, it's really funny because I have NFL Network on in studio, and even now as I look up, they're at Raiders training camp during the daytime. So they're re-airing this footage with a Max Crosby interview. And they're showing video on the side of the screen of Crosby getting in Mahomes' face and jawing with him. You do know that's an invitation to get your rear end beat, right? Max Crosby's awesome. And he certainly does have sacks of Patrick Mahomes on his resume. But it does crack me up. Why? Why are you trash talking with Pat Mahomes? Now, see, when I think about Mahomes and when I hear him giggle like a goofball, it makes me want to have football come quickly. And Max Crosby, too, is amazing. Anyway, what Terry said is that when you've got guys who are being really inappropriate, well, then it's hard to keep your mouth shut. But also, he's like, at my age, you just want to help.
When you're my age, you just trying to help.
How do you help exactly? So he says he was jawing back and forth with Anderson, and that's why there was some vitriol coming back his way. Now, Pedro Grifol, he won't really get into it. He doesn't want to talk about it, but he's going to play completely dumb here. What? Wait, what?
I'm one of them MLB do their, you know, investigation, watch the video, discuss it between themselves, and they'll come up with what happened. You know, they always do, and it's always on point. So I'm going to let them do their job, and you know, we'll discuss this at another time.
All right. So both managers ejected. There was a third base coach ejected, a relief pitcher ejected, obviously Ramirez and Anderson both ejected. I mean, Ramirez put his dukes up. He got into a fighting stance.
They legit were
trying to row. They were trying, no, row. They were trying to create a row. Wait, how do you pronounce it when it's R-O-W? Is it a row or a row? They
row.
Were row. They like were trying rowdy. To row.
I'm not sure I know everything.
It's actually a slang term. I just Googled it. Row. It's pronounced row. Is a British term for a noisy disagreement, argument, or fight. Is that so not baseball?
Yes.
A noisy disagreement. Speaking of that, Tom Hamilton, he's adding to the noisy part of this row. It's a British term. Noisy disagreement, argument, or fight. It's a slang term. They started at Cambridge University, in the mid-1700s, perhaps from the word rousal, meaning a bout of drinking. But row, it's pronounced row, is a word that may be used as a noun or a verb. Duh. There are rows that refer to brawl, or you can also row. Not row your boat, but row as in fight.
I haven't seen a connection like that, though, on a baseball field since Jose Bautista, Rougned Odor.
Yeah, it's funny because I have this high schooler that works with me on Sunday morning, so he volunteers in my class where I teach fourth and fifth graders. He never says good morning. He walked in yesterday and immediately launched into the Yankees, and I was like, oh, my eyes glazed over. I hadn't had enough coffee. And then he wants to talk about the brawl, and he goes on and on about the brawl, and he said, we haven't had one in baseball like this since Rougned Odor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he said the same exact thing. After he launched into his whole spiel and went through the whole deal about the row and the Yankees, I said, and good morning to you too. Well, this is my good morning, he said. Boys, seriously, boys. This is why I don't tell people what I do for a living. Because I was just trying to drink my coffee. That's it. I was just trying to have a nice, calm morning. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.